You're really thinking about what's your next move, where you're about to go, how much money did you spend on gas, so that you know how much money is left in your bank. So you're not really, and that's why it's an easy target.
Right, and the criminals, they know that. Right. You kind of zone out a little bit. Right. Not just the criminals, but
think about where you really go mentally when you're sitting there pumping gas. You're correct. Thinking about everything else except for what's around you. Especially if you're female. You know, your man or whoever, you know, is not there with you, son, whatever, and you have to pump the gas yourself. You need to be a little bit more aware.
You know, it's interesting. I know a lady in Detroit. She's probably in her 30s, but she's married about 10 years. She never pumped gas. Her husband always pumped her
gas.
That's
good.
He just filled her tank up and moved on about his week.
Yeah, my stepdad's like that. My mom rarely have to do it. She does it.
If you're in the presence of a man, then the man should get out and pump the gas.
Yes.
You know why? Because a man thinks like a SWAT team member when he's pumping gas, and he makes sure that the perimeter's safe.
He should. Yeah.
And then that's if the crazy. Woman is not in his presence, she needs to think the same way.
Honestly, if you're with your girl, Sam, if you're with your girl in the car, you guys go to the gas station, whether it's your car or her car. If you're in there with her, she's driving, you would allow her to get out and pump the gas while you sit in the car?
No, but that's a different story.
Why would you just get it?
We're talking hypotheticals.
What if she's real open-minded and like, you know, I'll get it. You pay for it. I'll pump it. You wouldn't stop her, would you?
Would you?
No.
Nope. Really?
Jamal, would you?
Yeah, Jamal.
If Lenina was feeling really in a good mood and wanted to hop out and pump the gas because she know you're going to pay for it, would you stop her?
Would you stop her from pumping?
Not necessarily. That's what she wants to do. See,
let me ask a question to the men in the room. If you're walking on a sidewalk, which side of the sidewalk do you walk on?
Good question.
Closest to traffic.
Closest to the street.
Okay.
Yeah. Close to traffic because women are clumsy and they might fall in the street.
You know what? No, that's not a hint. That's true, though, because I'm that one.
We have on heels. You need to stay. Yeah, you stand on over there.
I'll be the one to fall. I'll be like, oh. Next day, you know, I'm getting it back up. All right, low with the flow, along with the safety tips.
All right, so let's go in, guys. So, security at and in your car. Security to prevent you from being robbed or assaulted in your car. All right, tip number one. While traveling long distance, try to keep your gas tank at half full. This will give you more options to pick a safe place to rest or refuel. Look for fuel service gas stations if possible. Some states still have them, such as New York and New Jersey. All right, the rest stops, guys. When refueling, always try and get the gas pump that's closest to the clerk and the one in the most lighted area. Never leave your windows down. Never leave your purse or wallet in the car. Never leave your keys in the car or your car running. If someone approaches your car, blow your horn, or flick your lights, these are signs of trouble. If someone grabs you, scream loud as you can.
Jamal.
Yes. Scream loud.
Someone grabs him, he can be like, ooh. What's your name again? I'm sorry, go ahead.
You want my number? When grabbed, try to eye gouge, scratch, or bite, or hit the attacker. Areas like the nose. If you do so, basically what may happen, if you get seriously hurt or if you're killed, we will have his or her DNA to use as evidence and to track them down with. If you are, I know that's a little sad note, but that is reality.
Yeah.
If you are being abducted, try and touch the vehicle that they are placing you in, because your fingerprints could save your life or lead us to your abductor. And when I say us, we're talking about law enforcement, because you know I ain't sure. You know what
I'm saying? Low, I ain't coming to help.
Unless you got one of my own, and I'm gonna be like Halle Berry in that movie. I'm tracking you down. Yes. Just know that the fingerprints could save your life or lead us to your abductor. Remember, law enforcement always dusts for prints on all evidence. So even touch the actual person that is harming you, because they may still have the clothing or may have discarded the clothing, which will indicate that they have some connection to you.
So did you get that, Jamal? You want to make sure that you eye gouge, nose, leave fingerprints, scratch.
So I can't pull out my Glock and just, or Desert Eagle, and just give him the business?
Yeah, he didn't know.
We hope you're enjoying this time with us. It's now time for your education update.
October is National Bullying Prevention Month, and during this time, it's important to educate our communities about the impact of bullying for children of all ages. Now, we all know that bullying is not a new concept, and you may be thinking to yourself, kids have always teased each other, so what's the difference now? Or you may be thinking, I was teased or I was bullied and I turned out fine, so what's the problem? So if you've had any of these thoughts, I'd like to shed some light on what's changed over time. But first, it's important to understand the definition of bullying. Bullying is unwanted, negative, or aggressive behavior that involves an imbalance in power, and the behavior is repeated over time. Now, within the past decade, the topic of bullying has gained much attention as we've heard many heartbreaking stories of children who have been negatively impacted. Even adults have come forward to share how bullying has impacted their self-esteem over the years. So the topic of bullying is being shared much more nowadays on the news, on television talk shows, and in films. So if you're wondering what has changed, the first thing I will tell you is that our society is much more aware about this subject. A second factor that's made bullying such an epidemic nowadays is the presence of social media. Now, for those of us who are adults, social media is something that we've become accustomed to over time. However, our youth today are growing up with social media, and it's at the very center of their lives. So many youth today are not only dealing with bullying at school, but they also experience bullying through social media, which often follows them right into the comfort of their own homes. And one of the biggest issues is that they're not always telling their parents what's going on. So if you're wondering how you as a parent can help to prevent your child from becoming a bully or a victim of bullying, here are some tips. Number one, stay engaged in your child's life. Talk to your child and show warmth and care for their concerns. So even if their concern doesn't seem too serious, try not to dismiss it. And let's get back to the basics. Know who your child's friends are, meet their friends' parents, and monitor their social media and online activity. Number two, educate yourself by learning about the topic of bullying prevention. There are online websites and community organizations that provide information about bullying prevention, and it will be helpful for you and your child to become familiar with your school district's policy on bullying, which can often be found on your school district website or by speaking with a school administrator. Number three, conflict is a part of life, so it is important that your child learns how to avoid and or resolve conflict by using good problem-solving skills. Talk to your child about possible scenarios that they may experience or they may witness, and help them understand what their choices are. Children are often taught how to advocate for themselves with confidence while also informing an adult in situations such as this. So give them tips for dealing with bullying that they may experience, and talk about how they can help others. And be sure that your child is connected to at least one or two trusted adults at school whom he or she can report to. Number four, model kindness and respect. As a parent, you are always modeling to your children how to treat others. So if your child is constantly witnessing or experiencing conflict in the home, he or she will take these learned behaviors and use them at school and in the community with other children, which may get them into trouble. So again, give them good problem-solving tools by showing them how to interact with others. And number five, if you have a young child, I encourage you to start early by working with them now. Aggressive behavior is common with young children due to their stage of development. So teach your young child how to work cooperatively with others by sharing, being helpful, problem solving, and by using their words to communicate appropriately. For more information, visit drkcaresforyou.com. That's drkcares, the number four, yOU.com. These are Dr. K's educational tips for parent involvement.
Big thank you to everyone who volunteered and pledged during our membership drive. The WMNF family really appreciates that, and we all came together. Everyone really came through, and we were able to do so many great things and meet our overall goal, and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much for that.
WMNF 88.5 Tampa.
You're about to listen to the Urban Cafe.
Because there's a lot of you ladies who work in the evenings and walk from their building to their cars.
Exactly.
Or leaving a grocery store and trying to make your way. And you want to make sure you're not a victim to some of the predators that are lurking these streets. So you want to either have something to protect yourself, or you at least want to know what techniques to use.
Lockdown Brown.
Lockdown Brown, that's right.
Right, he came in and he has vast experience with the military and law enforcement and martial arts. I have taken this course. I took a 4-week course. I went twice a week. And you'll be instructed, men or women, as far as by a Marine Corps instructor, hold a Marine Corps black belt. So you're in good hands. Thank you, Christopher Brown, Lockdown Brown Executive. Yes, he was a past guest. So again, so going towards that martial arts skill training, concealed weapon training is what he does. LockdownExecutives.com.
Right here on 88.5 WMNF Tampa. We're back at our second hour, and joining us at the mic is the Honorable Judge Daryl Manning from the Hillsborough County Courthouse. How you doing today?
I'm great. Good morning to you all.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
He has a nice deep voice.
Yes. So today our topic has been basically trying to focus on mental health. And I noticed when I was doing a little bit of research on you that Tina sent me that I seen something said Veterans Court. And I thought that that was a great tie-in because we've been talking about a veteran who's been just corresponding with us over the last few years about his situation. And I was being, you know, educated the whole time because I had never had any previous knowledge of all these things that was going on. And so then I began to wonder, like, well, what happens in courts? And then how do the judges deal with this situation? And your veteran court program, is that your program? Is that just a county program? Are you involved? Do you see veterans come through the court? And can you explain a little bit about what that's
sure, like? Sure. I'll definitely touch on that. Let me share first. There is a veterans court that we have in Hillsborough County, and then I started a veterans outreach court. So there are two different things. The veterans court that we have, that's on the criminal side, and Judge Michael Shanti is the judge presiding over that one. And let me give you an idea of the type of matters that he hears. These are veterans that have been accused of various criminal acts within the county. And so there are a select number of cases that can be pulled from the normal criminal divisions. And because of their veteran status, those matters can be heard in the Veterans Treatment Court. And so as opposed to these veterans being convicted and being incarcerated, they have an opportunity to go through a program that includes daily contact with a counselor, with a mentor. Because they are veterans, they have access to VA facilities, and they're able to have various treatments such as mental health, psychological treatments, anything that deals with matters that they may have encountered while being a veteran, things that have given them trouble in life that may have caused or led to them being involved in criminal activity. And so as opposed to the incarceration and trying to deal with it that way, they are given an opportunity to go through the program. Again, very intense program. This is not something that you come in one day and you sign a sheet of paper and then you're done. This is a very intense program where the judge is presiding over it, and these folks are coming back for progress. The judge needs understand if they're dealing with their any kind of mental health issues they have, any kind of substance abuse issues that they have. They are going through various steps of treatment, either through the VA or through other facilities, to ensure that they are well integrated into society and to prevent this behavior from continuing. And so again, that's an alternative to simply having them go through the judicial process, possibly being convicted and then incarcerated.
Now, let me back up a bit. Let's talk a little bit about you. Yeah. All right. We didn't get a chance to really talk about you and who you are and how you got to become a judge. Can you give us a capsule of how did you go from being born to being a judge?
I can.
Well, we know how he was born. Come on now.
let me go through that very briefly. Okay. So I'm from Queens, New York.
Hey!
I'm a native of Queens. I don't have any Big East teams that are still in the NCAA tournament. But I see the Gator shirt going on around here, and I am a South Carolina Gamecock, so I'm going to touch on that. We got a big game coming up later this evening. But I was I enlisted in the military when I was 17 years old, and so I had a 30-year career in the United States Army, and a couple of deployments into Iraq and Afghanistan. And I was a mechanic when I started. After that, I branch transferred into combat arms. I was artillery officer because I went through ROTC at South Carolina, came out, I served as an artillery officer. As I said, I went, had a couple of tours. So it was very interesting as I was hearing your discussion with the vets and things that they face. I saw that on a daily basis.
Wow.
I have a full appreciation on things that they have gone through. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I thought there was something else I can do other than the military service that I had. And I went to law school. And so I went to law school at St. John's in New York. And then I went back into the Army as a JAG officer. And so I did that for about 12 years until I retired about a year ago. And so after a 30-year career in the military, certainly I looked at some other avenues for me. Prior to departing on my tours, I was with the Attorney General's office. So I was an attorney, an assistant attorney general, and I worked there for 16 years. And I handled multitude of cases, a variety of criminal cases. I represented various agencies. I heard you all talking about Department of Corrections, Department of Children and Families. I represented a variety of agencies and public officials throughout the state of Florida. And then I had applied. There's two ways that you can become a judge in the state of Florida. One is you can apply through the governor's office. And then the second one is you can run and be elected. So it is an elected position. And I applied. And after numerous times, I was received that call from the governor in 2015. And he indicated that he was appointing me as a county court judge. So here I am.
All right. That's exciting. Did you party after? Did you celebrate?
I was very excited to get the call from the governor. I did take some time to ensure that it was actually happening. And then when I realized, I did have a good time that evening.
Yeah, celebrations are good.
So then you are not, you know, you're very familiar when you're in a court and you have veterans coming in front of you. You've been through it, so you understand what they're going through. Earlier in the first hour, we talked about a veteran. And I know that because you're a judge, there's certain things you can't talk about specifically. So we're going to try to, you know, stay away from that and try to just talk generally about some of the issues that we've been learning through our conversation with other veterans and each other in our research. But the one that sticks out to me is the one about the veterans from the Vietnam War. You know, again, that technology that we have today to determine what's wrong with certain folks didn't truly exist back then. And some of them have still be in jail based on, you know, not having access to proper, you know, doctors and or technology, and are probably sitting in jail hoping for an opportunity to have their case looked at again. Are you ever, do you ever come across any kind of situations like that?
Sure. Well, let me speak at it from this standpoint. There are certainly some folks that may be incarcerated and still waiting for matters to be developed and further research. But also the flip side, we have a lot of veterans, whether it be from the Vietnam era, from Iraq, Afghanistan, that are homeless, that are out living under bridges, that aren't employed, that just still haven't readjusted to society. Mm-hmm. And so the court that that I spearheaded, that the chief judge gave me authority to initiate, is called the Veterans Outreach Court. And that is dealing specifically with the homeless and low-income vets. So I talked to you about the court Judge Michael Shanti spearheads, which is the Veterans Treatment Court. And those are specifically dealing with the criminal matters that veterans are dealing with. I deal with in the civil realm those veterans that are homeless, that are low income, and still have not fully reintegrated themselves into society. They may have had a brush with the law. They may have had some fines, some fees that have just mounted. There are some veterans out there with $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 in court fines and fees.
Wow.
And things that have just continued to mount. And it's prevented them from fully re-engaging back in society. So I coordinated with the state attorney's office, the public defender's office, the clerk of the court, as well as the VA, to put the Veterans Outreach Court together where we can deal specifically with their issues and see how we could relieve them of those fees and fines that, unfortunately, they would never be able to repay. And that has kept them from reintegrating themselves into society. So we've dealt with that. We conducted a court last year, and we were able to service 60 veterans, and we intend to do this again around Veterans Day, and we hope to service 100 plus veterans this year.
Before I go to Jamal's question, I just want to ask you, you mentioned, you know, homeless vets, and I remember learning about that as well, and that there were a bunch of vets sleeping in the bushes off of the freeways who did not want to go and use the services that are there for them. Is that a mental health issue? I mean, they're so messed up that they don't trust the system that they once were a part of helping to defend, that they'd rather sleep in a under a tree or bush off the freeway instead of going to a shelter provided for them?
Sure, that's an unfortunate reality. We have people that don't have issues that don't trust the system.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So just think, Bruce.
None of that one.
Just think about some of our veterans that are very resident from joining in at the VA level, at the county level, at the city level. They are very resistant from joining in, and you see them under bridges. Mm-hmm. You see them in the bushes, as you mentioned. You see them not fully engaged in society. When I walk to lunch and I walk through the parks downtown Tampa, you see many of the veterans that are out there just not fully engaged. And so there are folks out there like Thomas Brown, a former social worker with DCF, that is doing outreach. He's a former veteran himself, and he's the type of person that is walking around interacting with these folks, finding out that they're veterans, finding out that they may have some matters that are preventing them from getting into homeless programs because they have outstanding judgments against them, because they have traffic tickets, because they are deemed habitual offenders and they unable to drive because their license has been suspended because of these fines and these fees that they're dealing with. And so somebody like Thomas Brown will bring them into the Veterans Outreach Court. And so we can deal with those fees and fines and get them back on their feet and get them opportunities for employment, for housing, to engage back in society. So there's no question. When we drive by and you stop off the highway and you see folks holding up signs, a lot of them have been veterans that are just reluctant to just re-engage back in society because of that fear that you discussed.
Right. Okay, I want to go to Jamal, then Sam, and then I want to go to the phone line. So, Tina, if you can get off the phone number real quick, we'll do that in kind of a short order.
813-239-9663. Again, 813-239-9663.
She's actually here on the show because she does that better than anyone else. Jamal, you got a question?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor.
That's what I do.
And a quick question I have is, do you have some experience with veterans in particular that you've known from your extensive military career who've gone through issues with, like, let's say the VA or court issues? And just what in your experience have you seen has been things which have been helpful to them? Or I guess, how have you helped them out, of course, with this veterans court, or maybe just a phone call here and there? What has been your experience with veterans with mental health issues?
Sure. Well, the two courts I mentioned, I think, are doing a tremendous service to our vets, being the Veterans Treatment Court, because it's not just dealing with matters as a criminal situation. They are looking at the total person, the total veteran. They're understanding that there may be some psychological issues that may need to be dealt with, some mental health issues, some social issues, homelessness, etc. Right. So that's the benefit of the Veterans Treatment Court. And then also the court I spearhead, which is the Outreach Court, we deal with it on a civil side. And so not the criminal aspect, but the civil side in terms of dealing with homelessness and housing issues and employment issues and getting them back on their feet, helping them get a driver's license. Yeah. So what I've seen in terms of dealing with the veterans is, one, the outreach. They are very reluctant to jump back into society. They've been away for a period of time. If you talk about in the Vietnam era, if you talk about even the younger veterans that have returned back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and if they haven't been able to come back and gain employment, if they haven't been able to reunite with their family, they feel separated. And so it is so helpful for them to have some outreach, for people to approach them and lend a hand. And as I said, after our first Veterans Outreach Court, they're not looking for a handout. They're looking for a hand up. And so when we reach out, and all of us can do that, all of us can play a role. And you should have seen the faces on many of them when they had $12,000 in fines, $600 in fines, that there was just no way they could take care of. That was preventing them from getting a driver's license. And just imagine not having a driver's license and trying to get around Tampa or Hillsborough County or any community. It's just a deterrent. And so that holds them back from certain types of employment. It limits their housing opportunities, where they can work, where they can live. So I think we can all help our veterans by giving them a hand. And again, not a handout, but a hand up.
Let's go.
You know, PTSD is a very common problem that we see in mental health, and it's often an underrecognized problem, not just for veterans, but in society. Like you said before, we know that men and women are often exposed to traumatic events. Women slightly higher, fortunately, because of domestic violence and sexual assault. We have very effective treatments today. For example, like for a drug to be approved for the FDA, you need an effect size of about 0.8, showing that there's a real magnitude of improvement there. We didn't have these treatments, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but we do today.
WMNF Tampa.
It's the best of the Urban Cafe right here on 88.5 WMNF Tampa. To enjoy some of the highlights from the number one show in the worst times.
I'm here all week.
All right. So
literally, I'm here all week.
Yeah, that's true. Marilyn Shaw, ladies and gentlemen, is a part of the Urban Cafe. She's very, very, very good at what she does. And I'm going to give her the mic so that she can introduce our special guest for today.
And before she does that, Marilyn, just in case we have some new listeners and viewers, which I'm sure we do, tell them a little bit about what you do and your role here at the Urban Cafe.
Absolutely.
Sure. Good morning, crew. My name is Marilyn Shaw. I am a publicist in the Tampa Bay area. I like to bring on insightful guests to the Urban Cafe. Most of them are community leaders who are making a difference. Some of them have been journalists. And today we have a very special guest. She is someone that I look up to. She is the NAACP president in St. Petersburg. She is one that's very dynamite when it comes to solving issues, when it comes to not being afraid of making change. And she's actually in the middle of planning the Freedom Fund banquet that's happening in July. But aside of all of the things that she's doing, I am pleased to have her here today because there's been some issues going on in St. Pete. If you haven't heard, Tampa Bay Times last year featured five failing elementary schools labeled as the failing factories, and that's been excuse me, a huge issue. But that's not a task Maria is held back from. Today she's going to be talking about a recent issue at Campbell Park Elementary where the NAACP stepped in and is definitely calling to action the things that should be taking place. So none other, I'd like to give it up for Miss Maria Scruggs.
Welcome to the Urban Cafe.
Yes, we have to look up to her. She's taller than all of us. We all look up to
she
her.
She is absolutely gorgeous.
A queen
absolutely
in the building.
Absolutely gorgeous. Yes, we definitely want to thank you for coming here. So what is going on, man?
Well, that's the question that we've all been asking. And first of all, I want to thank the Urban Cafe on behalf of the St. Petersburg branch NAACP. It is so awesome to see a group of young people who are about
except
giving out, communicating and staying involved in the community. So certainly happy to be here.
Yay.
But the NAACP received two complaints. It's been now 2 weeks ago. One from our Florida State Conference, where the actual complaint went to our Florida State office, as well as one of our executive committee members that's in fact said that the principal, former principal of Campbell Park, white female, Mrs. Christine Hoffman, had sent an instruction to her staff, her teaching staff, which very clearly stated guidelines for how classrooms would be set up for the next year, as well as how classrooms would be set up for during the summer. Mm-hmm. And when you go through the list, it seemed rather innocent until you got to the third item from the bottom, which simply said that white students were to be kept together. Now, I'm a cop by training, so this was certainly something that I was taken back by and thought I really thought it was a joke. And what I said to the committee member that sent the email to me, well, we're not going to respond to this until we determine the authenticity of the email. And before I could actually get home, I work in Orlando and live in St. Pete, so I'm on that daily commute on I-4. And
you need a G-4.
Yes, wow. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
That's a long drive.
It's 1,500 miles a week. So Bay News 9 contacted me and arranged for a interview at my home. And while I'm in traffic, okay, my question is this authentic? Mm-hmm. Well, certainly by the time I made it to St. Pete, it was certainly verified that the email was authentic because they had an apology. And I was even more horrified when I read the apology. And it was based, I didn't know if the apology meant that Ms. Hoffman was sorry that she got caught or that she was actually sorry for the content. But one of the things I do in analyzing the content, and like I said, this is the cop thing in me. I'm looking at how you communicated the instructions, which were very bulleted. So it wasn't as if it was a narrative, and you know, sometimes you may get things out of context, but there was, it was a very clear instruction. And I think what became even more of a concern is that she distributed to her staff, and we only got 2 complaints. That meant that there were several staff that saw absolutely nothing wrong with
or
it.
Or they didn't read it.
They read it, but it was very much, well, because it was telling them the criteria that in which they had to set up their classrooms. So the issue got much bigger than Ms. Hoffman immediately. One of the issues, of course, you start to then address is the culture and the fact that there was a level of comfort. I do not know the makeup of instructors, black, white, but whomever they were at some level of comfort. I have received some anonymous calls since the NAACP came out to say that one teacher was horrified but was fearful and did share with her mom the email, and then it was the mom that called me and said, yeah, she okay. So we have to acknowledge that people have jobs and they are somewhat concerned about what happened if this got out. So I have to say, well, there were another few that got it but just didn't react for fear of retaliation for their jobs.
Wow,
right?
That's typical.
Yeah, but that still does not account for, you still had quite a few that saw it as business as usual.
Wow. What does that say about, you know, I'm sorry, but what does that say about the culture of that school prior to this letter? Because there has to be something going on for her to even feel comfortable to put that in there. And then secondly, that they didn't even say anything about it. So that is that norm? Is that the norm at this school?
Is this the first time we've witnessed something like this?
Well, the NAACP issued a 21-page position paper to the district last year, and we said that two of the primary issues that we find in the schools in Pinellas County is there's a lack of leadership and a lack of cultural competence. And cultural competence is not a diversity class, but it's just a leader who understands that in the 21st century, there are so many differences in people because of their ethnicity. Just because we are all of dark hue does not necessarily mean that we're all African Americans. Right. We may be African Caribbeans. We may be Africans from the continent. We may, you know, you have to recognize that there's no size fits all. So as a leader, one of the competencies that you must be able to manage is, how do I manage in a time where people are different? People have different experiences. Mm-hmm. There has to be a common goal that can be communicated and cross any cultural or ethnic differences. And Ms. Hoffman certainly did not represent that. I think what she represented was, as a white woman, I am very comfortable in saying to my staff that I want to make sure that these white students are going to be protected. Now, we have at Campbell's Park Hispanic children that are fewer in numbers than white students. We have three Asian students that are certainly fewer. We have multiracial. What about the protection of those children? Mm-hmm. But her instruction was very, very clear. We want the white students kept together. So, of course, one of the natural questions that follows is, were there any hints or any patterns of abuse? Which I find difficult to believe, because black people tend to be much more embracing and protective of other groups other than themselves, mm-hmm. oftentimes. So,
can I jump in and play mm-hmm. devil's advocate? Not that I'm a fan of the devil, but it's just a term that's used. Like, mm-hmm. I could think. So, when I first heard this comment, I tried to think in my head, what was she thinking?
Yes.
Like, what would make me do that?
Mm-hmm.
Let me step into her shoes.
Okay.
And let's say I was a black principal at a school that had only a few black students, and it was mostly white and maybe Asian students. I could almost see me wanting to protect them, if knowing keeping them somewhat together might make it a better situation for them, instead of them being singled out and being splattered all throughout the classrooms and being the only person out there on the island. And I don't know if that's the fact of what she was doing, but I could see myself trying to protect my own, and if I'm in a position of power, that would be something I would probably do. But wouldn't do it like she did, but I would probably understand.
What would you be protecting them from?
So let's when you take a black person or a black student, or and they're the only person in a white group, or they're the only minority in the room, a lot of times they're subjected to a certain level of what's the word I'm looking for?
Was it ostracizing?
Well, yeah, somewhat. I mean,
discrimination, bullying.
And sometimes when you're outnumbered, you do tend to just be quiet a little bit more, unless you're built for the fight, right? If you're not someone who's willing to stand up and take that hit, or, you know, speak your mind and then deal with the consequences of your comment, then you may not say anything. You'll just quietly go along, and they'll just kind of, and if you let somebody do it to you once, they'll do it to you twice. Mm-hmm. And when I think that when you talk to black people who are always in situations where they're the minority in the room, they tend to carry a little bit more baggage with having to deal with that subliminal bias that goes on when you don't really matter. I even see it here in the Urban Cafe. Yeah. When Sam's here, I had to ask Sam one day, Sam, do you ever feel out of place here? Because we joke a lot about a lot of things. And you being the only white guy on the crew, do you ever feel out of place? So me trying to maybe protect him because he's the minority, I wouldn't be surprised if that was her intent, is to try to protect.
But the white kids at this school are not the minority. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
white
students are the minority. Yes, they're not the Asians are minorities there. See, the issue, and some may follow that line of thought.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is, well, then what about the Asians?
Right.
Where they're even less?
Yeah.
What about the Hispanics? They're even less than the white students. I think that you probably struggled, like many of us struggle. What was her mindset?
Right, right.
What was she attempting to do?
I'm trying to find some good intent.
Yes.
In some way, somehow, she thought she was doing something right. And it just wasn't. And when it came out wrong, and it blew up in her face.
No.
And now she has to live with the consequences.
I don't think that's what it was. Well, I think that this is something that has been the norm at this school, because she had to. There are protocols in place when you're putting something together. Hey, read over this. Let me see how this sounds. Somebody else agreed and said, you know what? I agree with that. The white kids should be separate.
Well,
I don't think it was
the
just
the principal can write something and send it without any oversight, can't they? To their staff?
Of course you can. Right. Of course you can. But I think we're valid. Is heading is where we eventually took it.
Mm-hmm.
It was so she was so comfortable mm-hmm. that it was part of the norm that she, and remember when written communication, when you bullet something, you are very clear about a directive.
And you done thought it out.
You thought through it. Yeah, it's not like I'm writing a narrative and I may say something that may be a little bit awkward, but let me go back and read it. But because she delineated each point in a bullet, for me, added much more of the understanding of what the intent was to keep the white children separate. Now, again, you got to understand that you're in a public institution, you're in a public school where all kind of federal laws, children's civil rights are in play. So, again, being an administrator in the 21st century, you have to understand all those dynamics. Mm-hmm. And when you start putting things to pen to paper, you better sure enough have enough in you to know this is not quite probably what I want to say.
And going further to that, I mean, I'm sorry, this is just a dumb principle. This is a very dumb principle. Because you have to understand the context. Everything's in context. Because what happened in this school system, for example, is there's an article right here that I'm looking at, and it pretty much breaks down. The Southern Poverty Law Center had filed a complaint against this school system. And in this school system, African-American students were four times as likely to be arrested or disciplined in the school system. And now the U.S. Department of Justice is investigating the school system. Now, this was in December 2016. This is before this happened. So for her to bring further race issues to this problem, which clearly shows a discriminatory attitude against black students when you already have a history of doing it, that's just dumb.
Yeah. Well, you do know that we're in litigation as well. The NAACP is in a federal lawsuit where we have been with the NAACP's National Legal Defense Fund, where we've also, which has been the basis for discriminatory practices in Pinellas County school system for over 30 years, and we're still in litigation. So again, part of being an effective administrator, you have to understand the context.
Let me ask you a question, and anybody, do you think it would have been even worse if she'd have said, hey, put all black kids in a room as opposed to the white kids? Would that have any difference if white principal said, hey, put all black kids in this class, as opposed to, hey, put all white kids in this class?
I think mentally we would have still gotten the same message. Mm-hmm. You're just clearly stating you want the black, but your intent is for the white kids to be by themselves. I probably would have taken the same context as she's saying it the way she did. Let's go to the next caller. We're going to go to Josie out of Holiday. Josie, good morning. How are you? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much. What's your comment on this issue?
I think it's ridiculous. I'm sorry if this is going on in my daughter's 15, and if this was going on in her school, I would have to speak out about it, because in my opinion, it doesn't matter what her intention was. She's in a position where she should be ensuring all the kids' safety, and also they should be able to interact with each other, and they should learn how to interact with. I mean, this is a school. This is what we're supposed to be doing, is learning. We're not supposed to be separating people by, you know, race or sexual orientation or anything, you know. And to do that, I mean, I think it's a bad example for the community, for the county, for everything. I don't agree with it at all. I don't believe she has any excuse. I don't care what her intentions were as an adult. You know, I think she should have been more careful and thought about it a little bit more, because it's not just about protecting the kids. It's also about when you try to, you know, when you put it in those terms of protecting, you're isolating one child from another child, regardless of their race or whatever they believe, and they can't learn from each other. When you go out into the world, you know, there's going to be all kinds of races. There's going to be all kinds of differences out there. The school system is one of the places where these kids learn. We're talking about children. We're not talking about adults. So I don't agree with it, and I would have had to done something about it.
Josie,
that's right.
Hold on, everybody's shaking their
heads.
Josie, you a first time caller?
Yes, I am.
Hey. Welcome to the Urban Cafe, girl. You are a part of the show now.
So you know what happens now?
Yeah.
If we come on air Sunday and you're not here and you're not calling, we're calling you out.
We're calling you out. Yeah. We're gonna call you out. But listen, Josie,
I just happen to hear your show on the radio, because that your radio station is on in our house 24 hours a day.
All right.
Yeah, that's good. That's good news.
I'm hearing it, and I'm listening to what you guys are talking about, and I don't usually speak out, but you know, sometimes
good.
It's you kind of have to.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. Here in the Urban Cafe, WMNF
entertainment.
Human smuggling is more of a business transaction. So if I'm in a different country, I can pay for someone to bring me illegally into a different country. Mm-hmm. But then once I arrive to my destination, I'm free to go. I'm free to move. Now with human trafficking, once I arrive to my destination, then I'm exploited for someone else's benefit.
Damien St. Patrick Beston stood trial for crimes committed internationally, including the Middle East and Australia. Specifically, he was convicted of using psychological coercion and physical abuse against 7 known women.
The way the law is written, both internationally and nationally, you have to be able to prove force, fraud, and coercion is involved. Look at our child labor laws in America. To be able to work at Publix, you have to be, what, 15, 16? But to work in the agricultural industry, you only have to be 12.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, so... She's an extra special guest, so she has an extra song.
WMNF Tampa.
But before we begin with that, I'm going to toss it over to Lo, who's going to give us our LDE tips for today.
Yes. Remember, summer is coming and school will be out soon and vacations will begin. This also means that there will be more teenagers and juveniles getting into mischief. Since Florida has so many tourist attractions like Disney, Busch Gardens, SeaWorld, etc., there will be tourists and more crimes committed against them and senior citizens. Florida's crime increases anywhere between 10.5% to 25% due to school being out and the weather being hotter. There are more violent crimes committed during warmer weather than in colder weather in Florida. More shootings, gang activities, tourist assaults and battery, car and house burglaries go on during the summertime more so. When you go shopping at night, especially women, try to have someone with you. Also, when coming out of stores, don't have merchandise in your cart blocking your view. Criminals don't necessarily always go in the store and steal. Now they have scouts in the parking lot waiting on people to come out with a lot of packages and catch them off guard and robbing them. Always keep one hand free coming out of the store. And also, stop texting or using Twitter, telling everyone where you are at all times. Everyone doesn't need to know when you're not home.
That's good.
Establish verbal codes to your loved ones in case you are in a bad situation. And lastly, always try and park in a safe and lighted area, even while being pulled over by the police.
This is Val Trenda from the Urban Cafe. And on behalf of the Urban Cafe, we'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining us every single Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on Facebook Live. For those who join us early, thank you so much for not missing one moment of our fun and excitement. We also want to thank those for sharing, because sharing the page allows others to catch the show at a later time. Thank you for those who comment. All of your comments are appreciated, and you know we read some of them on the air. We want to thank those for liking the Urban Cafe page, because it tells Facebook how popular we are becoming.
Urban Cafe.
WMNF Tampa.
When we're talking about media, the Oxford definition of media means mass communication that reaches or influences people widely. And in that little box of media, we have television, radio, which print, newspapers, magazines, and the internet. So you're saying that all those forms of media have responsibility to be objective?
I'm specifically talking about news media because I feel like that's the most important form of media that has the highest gravity of responsibility.
Based upon what I've researched is that 90% of the media is owned by 6 or 7 companies. That's a huge monopoly of media control, an illusion.
They tell us what a successful person looks like. They tell us that a beautiful woman is skinny. All those things steer how we see ourselves, and it consciously and subconsciously makes us want to associate with certain products.
To me, I don't really watch news personally because the world is crazy. I don't need the news to tell me that. I can walk outside and see that the world is crazy, and I don't care for the news.
WMNF Tampa.
Yes, we do have Senator Daryl Roussan on hold, and I am so proud and honored to just say that this is a young man that actually represents us. He's doing an excellent job from what I see and hear. And I can't thank him enough for just being here when we need him and just to keep us educated and informed. So, ladies and gentlemen, please listen to Mr. Senator Daryl Russo.
Senator.
Well, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for...
I like the young man part.
I figured you would like that part. I'm sure you did.
Thank you for what you do at Urban Cafe, and thank you, Tina, for, again, inviting me on the radio show. I've listened to your program this morning, and health is a huge issue. There's a lot of uncertainty right now in the healthcare industry of what's going to happen. I'm celebrating 19 years of sobriety on March 17th, and one way I'm celebrating.
Wow. Good job.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go get my prostate checked, and I want to urge all men to go do that. Don't be afraid. It's better to know ahead of time before it's too late. And I'm enjoying the information that you're giving out concerning that.
Much for listening. And that's what we're here for. We're trying to get as much information out there to the community as possible. When you have this platform, you got to take advantage of that. So thank you again for listening and all your friends that you refer to listen to us, right?
Amen. And we tell the whole community that you're about information and giving people choices, informed choices. Well, we've had a whirlwind week in Tallahassee. It's hard to believe, but of the 60-day session, 5 days are already gone. There have been some big bills that have passed, some big ideas that have been debated. The Senate passed the new death penalty bill. We, as you know, the Supreme Court held our death penalty unconstitutional because it lacked unanimity. People could get sentenced to death on an 8-4 or 7-5 or 10-2 vote. And we debated against that in the House last year. And sure enough, the court came back and said, if you have unanimous verdicts on guilt, you must have unanimous verdicts on death penalty. So that bill passed this past week. There's a lot happening in education. The Senate passed a higher education bill, which is a hallmark bill of the Senate President Negron. But as the members of the Black Caucus stood up and argued, we're concerned about HBCUs and their funding. And we need to increase funding for FAMU, Bethune-Cookman, Edward Waters College, Florida Memorial, our traditional Black colleges and universities. And we're concerned about need-based scholarships, families that actually need it, as opposed to bright futures, which goes to families who may not be in need, but students have performed. I'm very proud to say that I've been very busy since the election, and I'm so grateful to Tampa Bay. I've had 5 town hall meetings, one with Sean Shaw, another with Councilman Frank Reddick over in Tampa. I've done 2 in St. Pete with Representative Ben Diamond and Representative Wengay Newton, and I've done 1 in Riverview. Can't forget about the Riverview, Brandon, Apollo Beach area of this Senate seat. And I'm as vice chair on the Transportation Committee. Transportation is big in Tampa Bay. TBS has slowed down. The reset button has been hit. We're sending notice that if you're going to build and enhance transportation, the community must be respected. The community must be involved in all of these kinds of plans. I'm very proud to say that the speaker appointed me to the Constitutional Revision Commission. That's big. Every 20 years, 37 citizens of the state of Florida are selected to review the Constitution of the state and make changes that go on the ballot, go direct to the ballot. Tampa Bay is going to be well represented. Former Senator Joyner, I'll be serving with her on that, as well as Tom Lee. So Tampa Bay is going to be represented. We've had a great week. You know, we've got huge transportation. I'd love to talk about that next time I'm on.
Great. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking out the time to come and talk to us wherever you are, giving us this update on the Tallahassee Report. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Senator Daryl Russon.
What's up, family? It's your brother Marquell, the Mark Man, a.k.a. Queasy, with Urban Cafe. And today I want to share the explosive wave of the podcast game with you. Hold it now. If you don't know, let me enlighten you. The podcasts I want to tell you about in our weekly podcast review are basically hour-long recordings of intense debate, conversation, and information regarding social issues, political issues, religion, life's challenges, and obstacles. What's the point of these podcasts? And why should you listen? Because there's an immense freedom in the dialogue and rhetoric of these unique, free-thinking, and often celebrity hosts and their guests of these featured discussions. There is an openness that allows the speakers on these various podcasts to engage in deep, captivating conversations. In the coming weeks, we will be touching on topics debated on various podcasts, such as The Read with Kid Fury and Crystal, Drink Champs with Nori and Friends, and Brilliant Idiots with Charlemagne and Schultz, just to name a few. We will also be hearing the opinions of interviewees such as Chris Rock, Jay Farrell, and Neil Brennan of The Chappelle Show, among others. In this week's podcast review, we go back to a conversation on Ice-T's Final Level podcast, in which the actor Ice-T, Ice-T's co-host Mick Benzo, and comedian Chris Rock discuss the leniency of the Secret Service at the White House. Let's take a listen.
In news, our United States president of the world has a thing.
Wait a minute, he's the president of the United States, not of the world.
He's the world.
The most powerful man in the world.
But he's the captain of the ship. United States President Barack Obama has people called, I guess, Secret Service, right? How in the hell do a person get, they can't even come in your door unless they be announced.
Childhood.
How can they get across the lawn at the White House, make it in the door, and you say these Secret Service guys know martial arts, they can shoot good, they let these folks run right up into the president's house.